Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research, papers, and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 214. In the news this week, very exciting, we had a brand new Mason's lady in the world. That's right, my wife gave birth to our first daughter. So those of you who know me, maybe know a little bit more about me than some, I have three sons, and this is our first daughter. And so we are very happy about it. Everything is great. We are very happy. My daughter is happy and healthy, and my wife is as well. And I've received a lot of well wishes over the last week, and I just want to say thanks so much for all of that, and also for the last minute Masonic posts going up like Wednesday and Friday and Monday mornings. They didn't exactly go up right at 7. They'd go up at like 7:15 because I would totally space out and forget, and I had to post really quickly to get it up. And so I've been on my toes, to say the least, to make sure that things don't get interrupted for you guys, for anybody who subscribes to the Midnight Freemasons, the Masonic Roundtable. I do apologize. I didn't get up that last episode till the morning. I was actually on my way home from a DDGM meeting. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, it's a District Deputy Grand Master's meeting. I am not a District Deputy Grand Master, but as an education officer for the district, I attend. On the way home, my wife called me. She said, you know, maybe I'm having contractions or whatever. And I said, it's time to call the doctor. So we called the doctor, we went in, and I went straight from a DDGM meeting an hour and 10 minutes away from home, right to the hospital. I met her there, and an hour and 15 minutes later, we had a new daughter. So quite an exciting evening. Right after the show, I was actually going to call and get on audio only with the boys from the Masonic Roundtable to discuss John's great episode on sacred geometry. Unfortunately, couldn't make that, but for good reason, right? So very happy. Thanks again to everybody out there for all the well wishes. We were just flooded and inundated. My inbox had like 175 messages the next day from listeners and supporters saying congratulations and stuff, you know, people who follow me on Facebook or whatever, and on Twitter. So thanks again. Really appreciate all the love. So first thing Wednesday morning, the episode Sacred Geometry from the Masonic Roundtable went up. Again, was not on that episode. I'm so bummed that I missed it because John gave a killer presentation. So nice job to Brother John Ruark for putting together a great presentation and the fellas for doing a great episode. If you guys can, please check it out. It is a heavy episode. You'll all love it. It's actually very, very popular. This episode has already been downloaded more times since it's been out than usually an episode gets downloaded in a whole week, and it's only been out a couple days. So please do check it out, themasonicroundtable.com, or download it off of iTunes from the Masonic Roundtable podcast. So this week, we're going to keep it a little bit short. I have an article, a famous Freemason, and we got to cut it loose because I am, as you can imagine, mega busy. All the best to everybody out there. Thanks again, and we'll get right into the paper. So the paper I have is apropos for the week. It is about the 24-inch gauge. Nothing I will be reading will be violating any of my obligations, so please refrain from the remember your obligations, bro, posts. This is all online. I'm reading it straight from phoenixmasonry.org. Yes, phoenixmasonry.org is a, what you want to call it, a clandestine organization, but regardless, the information is out there. The bell has been rung. We cannot unring the bell. The entry is for boxwood and brass 24-inch gauge, and it says the 24-inch gauge is a rule 2 feet long, which is divided by marks into 24 parts, each 1 inch in length. The operative mason uses it to take the necessary dimensions of the stone that he is about to prepare. It has been adopted as one of the working tools of the entered apprentice in speculative Freemasonry, where its divisions are supposed to represent hours. Hence, its symbolic use is to teach him to measure his time so that of the 24 hours in a day, he may devote 8 hours to the service of God and a worthy distressed brother, 8 hours to his usual vocations, or his job, right? And 8 hours to refreshment and sleep. So perhaps 2 hours when you come home from work, 6 hours of sleep, there's your eight. In a 24-inch gauge is a symbol of time well employed, following as best we can the example of the lines told to us by Longfellow in the Psalm of Life. Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime, and departing leave behind us, and 8 hours to refresh, and departing leave behind us, footprints on the sands of time. The Masonic essence of the lesson is ability, preparedness, and readiness, recalling the suggestion of William Shakespeare to the workmen in Julius Caesar, Act 1, Scene 1, Line 5, where is thy leather apron and thy rule? What dost thou with the best apparel on? interesting stuff. And of course, the 24-inch gauge is relevant for me, especially. You've heard me talk about it on the Masonic Roundtable. I actually have a 24-hour schedule that I, for the most part, adhere to pretty religiously. That is, I have it divided into sections of 30 minutes, and I account for every hour of every day of the week. Of course, there are exceptions, and I try my best, but people always ask, how do you get so much done? Well, that's pretty much how I do it, but there are guys out there who do way more with their time than I do and don't use that. Check out a day in the life of, say, Richard Branson, for instance, who is incredible. You know, the guy wakes up and makes $1 million. But in any case, here is the 24-inch gauge by Unknown. In the early editions of his monitor, 1797 and on, Thomas Smith Webb wrote, quote, "The 24-inch gauge is an instrument made use of by operative masons to measure and lay out their work, but free and accepted masons are taught to make use of it for the more noble and glorious purpose of dividing their time, it being divided into 24 equal parts as emblematical of the 24 hours in a day, which they are taught to divide into 3 equal parts, whereby are found 8 hours for the service of God and a distressed worthy brother, 8 hours for the usual avocations, and 8 for refreshment and sleep." End quote. Time and the often witnessed tinkering of well-meaning but uninformed brethren have altered here a word and there a phrase. In some jurisdictions it is now vocations, in others it is we instead of they, and so on. But in essential, most American jurisdictions use the paragraph as the great ritualist phrased it for us a century and a third ago. Unfortunately, he did not go deeply into the symbolism of the gauge, leaving it to us to dig out for ourselves its concealed meanings and learn from it as we are able to learn, thinking through it as we are able to think. Like most Masonic symbols, it conceals far more than it reveals. Like many, the monitorial explanation deals only with the obvious meaning, leaving their inner symbolism for the delver in the rubbish of the temple's verbiage who seeks the hidden truths Freemasonry discloses to all who look. Among the oldest of man's beginnings of civilization, measures seem to have originated among all peoples with parts of the human body, the foot, the hand, the palm, the digit, the cubit, elbow to the tip of the middle finger, etc. The word inch comes, as does ounce, from the Latin unice, or a unit divided into 12 parts. Some contend that origin of an inch was in the thumb joint, but both foot and Roman unice are very old, and our ancient brethren of Gothic cathedral building age must surely have known both. But what is important is not the name of the measure, but the division of the gauge into units, then its total, and their applicability to time. The relation of 24 inches to 24 hours is plain enough, but when we examine just what it is that is divided into 24 parts, the explanation becomes difficult. What is time? To most of us, it is the duration between two noons, the elapsed interval between any two events, the passage of certain fractions of life. To the philosopher, time is an unknown quantity. Like space, it appears to be a conception of the mind without objective existence. Modern mathematicians contend that time and space are but two phases of the same idea, like the two sides of a shield. While we can comprehend one without reference to the other, we cannot use one without the other. Every material thing occupies space for a certain time. Every material thing exists for a specified time, occupies space. We pass through space in 3 directions, up and down, right and left, forward and back. We pass through time apparently continuously in one direction from birth to death. We cannot go back for even the smallest fraction of an instant. Omar wrote, quote, "The moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. Nor all piety, nor wit, shall lure it back to cancel half a line, nor all your tears wash out a word of it." End quote. The operative workman measures his stone with his gauge. If the ashlar is too big, he shortens it. If it is too broad, he narrows it. If it too crooked to make square, he casts it on the rubbish heap and begins anew with a rough ashlar. But the speculative masonry measuring his time with the 24-inch gauge has no such latitude. The ruined minute is forever away. The crooked hour can never be made right. The day unfit for the building not made with hands can never be set in the eternal wall. Nor can the workman find any quarry a new day to mold. Thinking of it thus, could any symbol cry a more clarion call for accuracy of labor, for skill with which to work, for care and pains in building? 8 hours for the service of God and a worthy distressed brother, 8 hours for the usual avocation, and 8 for the refreshment and sleep. There is no time to waste. There is not time to be lost. There is no time for idleness. Thomas Smith Webb builded better than he knew when with so sparing a hand he laid out the speculative mason's time for the lighter side of life. In his conception, all such must be taken from the 8 hours allotted to refreshment and sleep. He who would pass the time away, he would indulge in past times, must, according to the monitor, take these hours from bed. To divide our 24 hours into 3 equal parts is a very practical everyday admonition. Here is no erudite philosophy such as laborer est ore, to labor is to pray, nor is there any suggestion that even refreshment may be in the service of God. Again, the old ritualist knew his audience. His instructions are simple. Their profundity is only for those who wish to look beneath the surface. For these, indeed, the whole 24 hours may be literally, quote-unquote, in the service of God, since labor and sleep are necessary for life as we have to live it, and it is poor theology which does not teach the common lot to be the will of God. In 1784, Sir William Jones wrote, quote, 7 hours to law, to soothing slumber 7, 10 to the world a lot, and all to heaven. Webb does not so put it, but if the 8 hours for labor also to be in the service of God, it must be labor which results in good work, true work, square work. Refreshment of mind and body, which is an offering to heaven, must be clean and wholesome if, on the morrow, the laborer is to be wholesome and clean for new labor and prayer and service. The mason interested in a further interpretation of the threefold division of 24 hours need look no further than the great light upon his altar. Indeed, he need only turn back from Ecclesiastes 12 to Ecclesiastes 3 to find the inspiration of the monitorial admonition that there is a time for everything. We read, quote, to everything there is a season, and a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. But nowhere in the wise counsel of the prophet or patriot, preacher or teacher is there a set forth a time to waste time. Time is the very substance of life, its golden minutes the only stones we have with which to build. Every accomplishment of man, be it temple of marble or temple of character, act of selfishness or selfless giving to others, building a nation or building a house, must be accomplished with time. Without time, nothing is ever done. Hence, he who wastes either his time or another's squanders that which he cannot replace, which comes from we know not whither, to go we know not whence, which once gone is gone forever. About us are many varieties of men with as many ideas of how time should be spent. Every human being has the same number of minutes in an hour, of hours in a day, of days in a year. Some have little or nothing to show for their 34 or 50 years. Others have great accomplishments to exhibit as the product of their time. Lincoln used all the time he did not need to devote to his usual avocation to mastering geometry, learning politics, understanding the question of slavery. Albert Pike made himself a learned scholar by constant use of spare time. These men knew what the 24-inch gauge really meant, how profound a symbol it is. Aye, Lincoln knew, though he was a Freemason only in his heart and not a member of any lodge. It provokes sober thought to apply the Masonic rule to a determination of how long we really have. Our days are allotted as 70. We rarely start our life work before we are 20. Of the 50 years of actual time for labor, we are admonished to spend 1/3 of it in the service of God and a distressed worthy brother, 1/3 in refreshment and sleep, and but 1/3 in labor. Not quite 17 years in which to accomplish all we have to do. No wonder so few of us leave behind a monument which will stand long enough to be seen by the coming generation. still less one which will last through the ages. But the harder the task, the greater the joy of accomplishment. Much has been made of the amount of time spent in the service of God and a distressed worthy brother by enemies of the craft who have tried to read into this admonition the thought that the other 16 hours are to be used without service of God and that only a distressed brother is to share in our labors. This, of course, is pure nonsense. If we instruct a workman to build a wall, we mean that he is to carry the brick, make the mortar, lay the courses, level the hole, leaving an opening for the gate, point up the joints, do the whole job. Service to God, then, does not mean merely spending time upon one's knees in prayer, but living life acceptable to the great architect. By worthy distressed brother, we have no reason to assume that masonry means only brother of the mystic tie. Masons are repeatedly bidden to turn up the great light as the rule and guide of faith and practice. Here we find, quote, "Inasmuch as ye do it, into the least of these," end quote. And all men who own to a common father are brothers. The attentive Freemason quickly notes how frequently are the Masonic allusions to work and how few to refreshment. Our 24-inch gauge gives us almost grudgingly, it seems, 8 hours for two occupations of which we know one needs the greater part. 8 hours for refreshment and sleep, the other 16 are for labor, work, effort, and doing. To him who finds labor irksome, the 24-inch gauge must be a painful symbol. Alas, all symbols are painful for the idle. But for those who have learned life's greatest lesson, that the most lasting joy comes from accomplishment, the symbol is beautiful. Fortunate is the man who is happy at his daily task. Discontented he who has not found his work. For him who likes his job, 16 hours a day are scarce enough. Find the carpenter who carves wood in his spare hours, the bookkeeper who spends his evenings doing mathematics, the doctor whose leisure is spent teaching his healing art, and you hear men singing at their labors. Men who curse the clocks, which go too fast. Find the mason interested in the ancient craft, prompt to offer his services for visiting the sick, doing committee work, helping the tiler, laboring on fellow craft or degree team, and you see one happy in his lodge. Such men have no time to waste. All have some division of their gauge of time, which makes every minute count, with 60 seconds worth of distance run. Time, substance of life. Time, gift of the great architect. Time, building stone for the spiritual temple. Time, man's greatest mystery, bittersweet enemy, truest friend. Its care, conservation, employment is the secret of the 24-inch gauge. Its waste and aimless spending is the sin against which this symbolic working tool unalterably aligns the ancient craft. The scythe emblem of time wins in the end. We can race with Father Time for but a little while. But we can win while we are permitted to race. And at the end of the great ruler of our lives is merciful. As you think of the 24-inch gauge and its three divisions, think also of these tender and beautiful words written of the mighty servant, mightier master, Time. I bring you woe and scalding tears and all life holds of sadness. Because I am remorseless, your heart in torture pays. In bitter coin of memories of times when time was madness. I am the passing hours, I am your march of days. Enemy and best of friend am I to those who sorrow. Pitiless in passing, yet oh so slow, so slow. I hurry to the sleeping, the grayness of tomorrow. Sluggard in my sundown, I never seem to go. Little bit by even less, all pain I can diminish. Slowly win the smile to eyes that now know but to weep. I begin your race with life, and I shall see its finish. My arms and none but mine shall in the end give sleep. I linger not for anyone, yet I may not be hastened. You must bear your agony until I bid it cease. But when your head is in the dust and all your pride is chastened, at long last I promise you I bring the gift of peace. All right, that's the end of that paper. I hope you found it edifying. Kind of apropos here is the fact that the second I finished reading that paper, I got a phone call and it said, we're ready to come home. So, right after I recorded that, I went and picked up my wife and daughter and brought them home. They had a good first night, and I'm actually recording this Famous Freemason segment the next day. So, without any further ado, Famous Freemason of the Week. This week's Famous Freemason is William Hogarth, born the 10th of November in 1697, and he passed away on the 26th of October in 1764. He was an English painter, printmaker, pictorial satirist, social critic and editorial cartoonist who had been credited with pioneering Western sequential art. His work ranged from realistic portraiture to comic strip-like series of pictures called Modern Moral Subjects. Knowledge of his work is so pervasive that satirical political illustrations in this style are often referred to as Hogarthian. On the 23rd of March 1729, Hogarth married Jane Thornhill, daughter of artist Sir James Thornhill. He was initiated as a Freemason before 1728 in the lodge at the Hand and Apple Tree Tavern, Little Queen Street, and later belonged to the Carrier Stone Lodge and the Grand Steward's Lodge. The latter still possesses the Hogarth jewel, which Hogarth designed for the lodge's master to wear. Today, the original is in storage, and a replica is worn by the master of the lodge. Freemasonry was a theme in some of Hogarth's work, most notably, quote-unquote, Night, the fourth in the quartet of paintings later released as engravings, collectively entitled The Four Times of the Day. He lived in Chiswick from 1749 when he bought the house now known as Hogarth's House and preserved as a museum. He lived there for the rest of his life. The Hogarths had no children, although they fostered children quite often. He was a founding governor of the Foundling Hospital. Among his friends and acquaintances were many English artists, satirists of the period, such as Francis Heyman, Henry Fielding, and Lawrence Stern. Hogarth died in London on October 26, 1764, and was buried at St. Nicholas Church in Chiswick, London. His friend and actor, David Garrick, composed the following inscription for his tombstone, quote, "Farewell, great painter of mankind, who reached the noblest point of art, who pictured morals charm the mind, and through the eye correct the heart. If genius fire thee, reader stay. If nature touch thee, drop a tear. If neither move thee, turn away. For Hogarth's honored dust lies here." That's it for this week. Please find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at WhenceCameU. Don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And, of course, 10, 9 Central every Tuesday, the Masonic Roundtable. Go back and check out that latest episode, Sacred Geometry. Until next week, stay on the level. For WhenceCameU, I'm Robert Johnson.